Robin. Yum. Now, I did read something that said that most Red Robins are located near movie theaters. Is that true?
Well, there's a lot of, it's not at all uncommon that we are considered what's called a casual dining restaurant. Mm-hmm. And casual dining restaurant is exactly that. It was casual. You didn't have to plan ahead. You didn't have to reserve. But you would bounce through a casual dining restaurant on your way to or from doing something else, like going to the movie, going out to shop, going to the soccer, game, that kind of thing, or any one of those things that you would have been out and about doing. So it was very typical from a real estate strategy for us to locate near malls, and malls often have movie theaters, or what's called kind of power centers, realty power centers like Costco's, and places where lots of people come. And so you, as a casual dining restaurant, you took advantage of the opportunity to capture those folks that were coming to something else.
You're now tuned in to The Investor Show, where we teach simple wealth creation for the common investors with investment advisor, award-winning author, international speaker, and founder of Royal Financial Investment Group, Prince Dykes.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, you are now tuned in to The Investor Show. As always, this is your host, the Prince of Investing, Prince Dykes, coming all the way live from the beautiful state of Denver, Colorado. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, and comment button. But as always, I don't have a lot of time, and I definitely know you guys and girls don't have a lot of time, so we're going to jump straight into it. So today we have a very, very special guest on the episode today. I know you probably heard of Red Robins. Red Robins is a gourmet burger and brew restaurant franchise. It's about, 525 stores nationally, billion-dollar brand in revenue. Great things going on at the restaurant, but today we had a CEO by the name of Danny Post, and I reached out to her. I met her at a conference or a meeting or something like that. I got the chance to meet her, and she was really one of the first women CEOs that I personally met of a global brand, of a well-known brand. And being Women History Month in March, I thought I'd reach out to her and have her sit back and give her some of her experiences, some of the things about what she does, about the brand, running a billion-dollar brand, 27,000 employees, and her history with Burger King, KFC, Pizza Hut, Starbucks, Taco Bell, hopefully I got all those right, and now being the CEO of Red Robins. So without further ado, let me introduce my guest, Ms. Danny Post. Danny Post, how you doing today, ma'am?
I'm doing very well, Prince. Thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me to join you on this podcast.
Definitely. Thank you. Now, the first thing I want to get into for people out there who, I know I gave a, hopefully I didn't butcher intro, but people out there who may not know who you are, who is Danny Post?
Oh my goodness! Well, who am I? Boy, that could take a while on the couch. I am the CEO of Red Robin, as you said. I'm a mother. I have a 25-year-old son and married for 26, coming up here on 26 years. I'm also very active as a advocate for women in business and advancing women leaders across the industry. Active with Women's Food Service Forum, which is an organization that helps develop women's leaders. I'm a member of the Wyndham Destinations Board as well, which is another publicly traded, much larger firm actually than Red Robin. And I am somebody who genuinely loves to support entrepreneurs like yourself.
Definitely, definitely appreciate it. Definitely, definitely. Now, the first thing I want to bring up, it's a bunch that I want to say, but how is it being a woman, being in that type of position over a $1 billion brand, 27,000 employees, hundreds and hundreds of stores all across the globe? What is it? What does that feel like, to be in that type of position? I know it didn't happen overnight, but
No, it definitely did not. It is a tremendous responsibility. We are a publicly traded company. So we have I consider us having three primary stakeholders in our business. The first is our guest, the ones that we serve and the only ones who truly pay us every day and expect nothing in return except a great meal and a great experience. Secondly, we have our team members, the team members you mentioned that are working in our restaurants, are supporting our restaurants, or here in our home office in Denver. And then the third, of course, is our stockholders. And our stockholders are absolutely critical to us because They take the time to invest in our brand, to give us the right to be able to invest in the things that will help us grow. And so all three are critical, and I think about every one of them every day. Our responsibility to the guest, our responsibility to our team members, and the responsibility to our stockholders. Our mission is to make everyone better for being here at Red Robin, and that includes all three of those. So we work every day to try to give the best service and best food we can, the best place to work for our team members, and of course, the greatest return for our shareholders.
Awesome. Now, like you said earlier, you like to support entrepreneurs. The thing about it is, what advice, with all your experience, with all the things that you have seen, what advice would you give an up and starting entrepreneur, or current CEO, or someone who's thinking about owning their own business?
Wow. Well, running your own business takes a certain level of courage and tolerance for risk that I truly admire. I think the biggest thing is to remain open to evolving the business rapidly. You know, so often people get a vision of what they want to create, and any step off of what they perceive to be their path, they view as a setback. And instead, all it is an opportunity to reconsider, am I on the right path? And, you know, I think that flexibility, that creativity, that openness to growth can make the difference between a success and a failure. And that's in any business. You know, success is never, rarely a straight line. It is a combination of lots of steps sideways, backwards sometimes, and sometimes circularly before you know exactly what you're doing and whether or not it's going to work.
Okay. Now, I have a question. I was recently at Red Robin's. And,
oh, you were? Eh?
Yeah, I really was. I was at Red Robin's. And Red Robin's has changed so much from the last time I had gone. I didn't know about the brewery, the bar that it added, and all the beer and stuff like that. Yeah. That threw me off. So how does Red Robin make its menu selections?
Oh, gosh. Well, we actually have a research facility where we bring people in, and they get the opportunity to taste new items and rate them. So it's called a sensory facility. So it helps us optimize anything that we're thinking about putting on the menu. We do research across the country to ask people what they're interested in. For example, we're launching the Impossible Burger this week, which is a vegetarian burger. It's plant-based protein, and it's become very popular for what is now known as the flexitarian. So not somebody who wants to be purely vegetarian, but who wants to start to cut down on red meat or animal proteins in their lives. And so we're launching the Impossible Burger. That went through extensive testing. I'd say we've been doing this for at least 18 months before we chose this option and brought it forward. And we also often test market in certain regions, particularly if something's going to be advertised. We want to make sure that it's going to be worth the national investment that it takes to do that. And so we'll do regional tests, and sometimes people in various parts of the country will get different things. Now, you mentioned you thought we'd added the bar. The bar has always actually been a part of Red Robin, dating back to its start 50 years ago in Seattle, when it was a waterfront university bar that kind of served burgers. It was almost flipped on its head the other way around. But over the years, it's morphed to be more of a family place. We think including beers and some of the lighter alcohol options is a good choice these days. And so we have a little bit of it all, and we serve a multi-generational guest, everything from small kids to grandparents, and we enjoy taking care of everybody that way.
Yeah, maybe I didn't remember seeing it, but I definitely remember being a sit-down gourmet burger type thing. Yeah. But I want to, before I jump to that, I want to hit on to something that you kind of mentioned with the semi-vegetarian burger. Mm-hmm. With the industry or the trend amongst millennials with becoming vegans and all these different type of diets that are kind of trending, do you see that as possibly being an issue going into the restaurant industry or with particularly Red Robin that specializes on burger, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, actually for us it's a great opportunity because we've always you know gone out of our way to customize everything we make, and you can if you're on the keto diet, there's a way to have a burger that we wrap with lettuce instead of a bun. If you're someone who is a true vegan, we have a vegan, a vegetarian vegan or a vegan build. we can absolutely do a vegan build. We can do a vegetarian build of a burger. We are very aware also for all those who have allergies, which is a growing issue in our population. And we have a special program that was actually developed by a father because his daughter had such profound allergies, where you go into our restaurant, you plug in exactly what you're allergic to, and it tells you exactly what you can have on our menu.
Oh, nice.
In an automated fashion rather than you having to hunt and pack and figure it out. So we really work to customize our foods and really our experience as well to whatever the guest needs. And what's happening today is more and more guests are choosing to dine out at the restaurant. You know, they're staying at home and watching, great programming on television instead of going out to the movie theater. Mm-hmm. They're ordering from Amazon on their iPad instead of going to the mall. And so they still want restaurant quality food. They just want to be able to consume it at home. So we're also having to work to really make sure our food travels well and that guests can access it and take it home as well.
Because I did see you guys on like the DoorDash and things like that,
yeah.
Little apps that you can order things. Now that you mentioned that about movies, I read something that I thought was pretty intriguing, and I wanted to ask you, was this true? Mm-hmm. That you said that more people are staying home, more people are watching mm-hmm. Amazon and Netflix and YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, you know, or whatever, listening to podcasts, whatever, from the convenience of their own home. And they are not going out to restaurants as much, but they still want the restaurant quality food. Now, I did read something that said that most Red Robins are located near movie theaters. Is that true?
Well, there's a lot of, it's not at all uncommon that mm-hmm. We are considered what's called a casual dining restaurant. Mm-hmm. And casual dining restaurant is exactly that. It was casual. You didn't have to plan ahead. You didn't have to reserve. But you would bounce through a casual dining restaurant on your way to or from doing something else, like going to the movie, going out to shop, going to the soccer, game, that kind of thing, or any one of those things that you would have been out and about doing. So it was very typical from a real estate strategy for us to locate near malls, and malls often have movie theaters, or mm-hmm. what's called kind of power centers, realty power centers like Costco's and places where lots of people come. And so you, as a casual dining restaurant, you took advantage of the opportunity to capture those folks that were coming to something else. So yes, we are often located near movie theaters, and we're about 17% of our base is actually in enclosed malls. And wow. That's the area that has the greatest concern because, as we all know, there are major mall anchor locations like the Sears and the Macy's and the, Dillard's of the world that are under mm-hmm. a lot of challenge. And then even the smaller retailers, the ones that kind of make up the space between the big anchors on the end of the mall, like a, Victoria's Secret to a Foot Locker, are starting to close mm-hmm. units. And so malls and the future of malls is very much in question.
Okay. So now, with that being said, that you guys are located inside and around malls and movie theaters and, the slower traffic drawdown of people just staying at home using Amazon and things like that, what are some creative ways, if you don't mind sharing, that you can see combating those foreseen risks in the future?
Well, the first is you have to knock down, any challenges around the guests being able to access your. So it's as simple as having a dedicated parking space, so that you can pull in, park, and run in and pick up your food to go if you choose to. The second is being able to be very easily accessed online. And for that, it means not just, your desktop computer, but mobile-enabled ordering. I sat last night while watching the March Madness games and mm-hmm. realized I didn't feel like getting up and making dinner. And so my husband and I agreed on something. We ordered something and he ran out at halftime to pick it up. But wow. It was a restaurant that was, 8 minutes away from us. So it made sense. Now the other option is to have someone bring it to your house. And this is probably the most, if you've been watching any of March Madness this week,
course,
it seems like
course.
Everybody is advertising their delivery, everybody from Subway to Taco Bell to competitors of ours, people like Chili's, et cetera. Everybody's advertising it. The challenge is that it comes at a premium, right? You've got to, mm-hmm. If you go and pick up your own food, it's your choice whether or not to tip anybody in that process, but you pay the price that's charged and you take it home. If you have somebody else bring it to you, there's got to be a premium added. And it happens in two ways. One, there's a delivery fee. Often there's a minimum, which is, you know, that you have to, you know, place an order for $25 of food or more, and then you pay a delivery fee of, say, $5 or something. And then the restaurant is paying a percentage of that to this third-party group, be they Uber Eats, Grubhub, DoorDash, or anyone, the rest of them. And so it's putting a squeeze on margins. It's not just the delivery fee you're paying. The restaurant is also having to pay for this. And, you know, it seems to be the wave of the future, the gig economy, which is someone who just drives their car to do all kinds of things, right? Mm-hmm. In this case, cars. They may be an Uber driver taking you to the airport, or a DoorDash driver bringing you a pizza. And they are free as contractors to work with any one of those organizations as they choose. But that, you know, the question of whether or not that's sustainable over time, mm-hmm. Whether those individuals can actually make a living doing that and feel good about it, versus being employees of companies, is kind of up in the air right now, because there's so mm-hmm. much pressure on this full employment economy, that the prospect of how long will folks want to work that way, and will that be sustainable? So that's the delivery piece. Now, there are others like pizza who've always had their own employees do the delivery, but they have the scale to justify it, having somebody on full-time or multiple people on full-time to do that. So it's a really interesting space. And then you see the future, and it may include drones that bring you that pizza.
I did see some kind of studies going around with, can a drone deliver pizza?
Yep, drones and or robotic vehicles. This is where you could easily imagine autonomous vehicles, with no driver pulling up, and it's up to you to go out to the curb and retrieve your pizza, or small robotic vehicles in urban areas that can actually traverse blocks and elevators and everything else to drop off food. So. I think we will see this, Prince. I know you to be a younger man than I am, woman, but I think we'll see this in our lifetimes. We'll see some form of this, certainly.
I'm just slightly younger, that's all. Slightly.
We're all as young as we feel.
You brought up an interesting point that you watch March Madness. I would not have guessed that for you.
I'm a major basketball hound. I love basketball.
Wow. Man, I never played.
I never played, unfortunately. I was in school before Title IX, and so I was a dancer in high school, not an athlete, because we just didn't have as much in women's athletics. But I am a basketball fanatic.
Well, yes, who you have winning the tournament?
I am pulling for Auburn. I am going with my with Charles Barkley and his affinity for Auburn, and hoping that they come through. Though he actually picked Virginia to win the whole thing, and then I'm really pulling for our Nuggets to make it through, because they're such a great young fiery team that I really hope they can make it through into the finals here of the NBA this year.
Okay, all right. So are you a Broncos fan?
I'm sorry. A who?
Broncos, Denver Broncos.
Oh yes, well, oh I, yeah. I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I was still thinking basketball. I would describe myself as I've lost a little of my taste for football. With all the news about the toll it takes on players, I have to admit I have a harder time watching it now, and I just don't find it as entertaining as I do basketball. And I'm not a baseball fan at all. Baseball is like watching paint dry for me. But I'm a Broncos supporter because I believe in the hometown teams and certainly hope they'll have a better year than last year. But I have a hard time watching football now because I just think of the toll it takes on those individuals, and it kind of bothers me. It does feel like contemporary gladiator kind of sport, and I'm not sure that's right.
Yeah, CTE and
my gosh, yes.
Body gets banged up. And the thing is, do you remember the running back, the Broncos? Well, he's in the Hall of Fame now, Terrell Davis.
Mm-hmm, sure. Mm-hmm.
So, quick story here. The reason why I kind of thought about it, I didn't know you was a sports fan at all, but I met Terrell last year at the Broncos Stadium, and mm-hmm. he saw my my first two books that you have. He saw the first two books, and he knew what my third book was coming out. I told him it was coming out in June of next year, and he said, "Prince, you know, I got to be in this next book. You know, you have to put me in this next book." And I thought he was joking. I thought he was just being nice. I said, "Oh, okay, you know, nice to meet you." And you know, he's like, "No, I'm serious." Like, you know, and then I realized he was very serious when I started getting contacted by his manager, and he announced it at the Broncos Stadium in November. And that he came up, he called me out and announced the whole thing. And the book comes out in June at the Broncos Boys and Girls Club. So,
oh, gosh, that's awesome. And this is specific to, you know, I love what you're doing with the whole financial literacy and the challenges of helping young people understand how to navigate and think about their finances. I used to be very active with Junior Achievement as a volunteer.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And, you know, and that's, again, a great program that relies on folks going in and helping you know, students understand, right, that how to balance how to manage their money, right, and how to think about accumulating wealth and those things. And so I think that's critical. I'm glad to hear you got Terrell involved. That's awesome. So
yeah, it was really pretty cool.
I'm sure.
So we're looking at Rod Smith, the Broncos wide receiver. He's going to host a book launch. I ended up.
Oh, that's terrific. He's always so present at the stadium. You know, we have the opportunity. We actually were a sponsor a few years ago, and then you know, the Broncos got a little too proud of their team in terms of what they wanted us to pay for it. So we decided there were other things for us to do with Red Robin money than that. But I remain a big supporter, and Ron, I know, is often around and very much present. So that's terrific. What else can I offer this morning, my friend? And
all right. Now, the other thing is that you spoke about the Amazon. I know we got sidebar there for a second. I didn't know you was a sports fan. That threw me off.
Oh, okay. You know,
I was like, whoa, she in the sports? She watched basketball?
Oh, yes, sir.
But the thing about it now, the hamburger tattoo. The CEO of a
billion-dollar
company, Red Robins, gets a hamburger tattoo. What is that about?
Well, you know, it's the challenge is always to motivate the individuals who lead all of our restaurants, and we own about 482 of them as a company, and then there's another 87 or so that are franchised. And so a lot of what gets done in our restaurants happens directly through our team members that are part of our corporation. And so when I first got promoted to CEO about 2.5 years ago, we needed to step up our game a little bit at that point. So I challenged our organization to improve their service levels. And it's measured by a score called the Net Promoter Score, which is derived from guests responding in our restaurants on the little tabletop technology pieces that we have that allow for payment and feedback. And so so I challenged the team to say, hey, can we improve our service as measured by this score? And I was at a meeting, and a young man who at the time was an assistant manager, he since has become a general manager of one of our restaurants in Seattle. I was admiring his ink. And he said, do you have any tattoos? And I laughed and said, no, but if you guys hit this score, I'll go get one. And he said, are you serious? And I said, sure. You know, and honestly, I kind of threw it out there. And then I thought, well, now I'm committed. So it became the Get Denny Inked Challenge. And sure enough, they pulled it off. And we were in Vegas for our next annual meeting. And so I went out, and I had the choice of where it went and how big it was, and they had the choice of what it was. So I have on my upper left shoulder the tattoo of a little burger man with a heart. And and you know, it was a fun thing to do. My son thought it was pretty cool. He and I are now the two with tattoos in our family, not my husband. Mm-hmm. And he loved that I was actually in Inked magazine, and I was also in Inc., INC, so it got financial coverage as well as novelty coverage. But, you know, it was a way of putting putting my arm where my
mouth was. My question, is this your only tattoo?
Well, it is my only tattoo at this point. I have told them if we can, you know, do what we need to do with the business and get through all the challenges we're facing right now with this changing demand curve and way people view us and everything else, I'll get a sleeve tattooed if I thought it would make a difference. But, you know, it was an easy thing for me to do and important to the team. And I actually followed through. So I wear it proudly. You know, I'm an old lady, so I don't bare my arms all that often, but I do go out of my way to make sure people can see it when we're all together and celebrating. So that's kind of fun.
All right. Well, this is the last question here. You kind of hinted on it when you said about the challenges going forward. Mm-hmm. What are the challenges going forward for Red Robin? Or what is the way going forward or things like that?
Well, I think the biggest thing is for us to evolve from being just a destination for dining to being a destination and a source of great burgers. So, again, as I spoke to, if people want to have catering for office events or parties, or if they want to have take their burgers and take them home to consume, or however they want to access us, we need to evolve from being purely a dine-in restaurant to a restaurant that still makes all those great burgers and provides all that great service, but just does so in everything from tableside dining to virtually online to delivery to your door to everything in between. So that is a more complex business. Restaurants are not easy. People often think, how hard can it be? I think I'll open a restaurant. Restaurants are thin margin, heavily dependent, obviously, on employees, team members, guests, and the ability to sustain those. And so, you know, it's already a difficult business, and it's getting more complex. And if we can evolve and manage through that, then we'll be here for generations to come, and that's our goal.
All right. It was definitely great. Thank you for stopping by. Is there anything you want to say to the listeners out there across the globe?
No, I would just say, please. Listen in, develop your own financial and investing skills, be responsible for developing and holding your future in your hands and not letting others decide it for you. And please, if you're near Red Robin, drop in for a great burger. All right.
All right.